Hello, welcome everyone to Journeys to Success Radio Network. Our purpose on JTS Radio is to interview people who are making a positive difference in the world with transformational businesses, thoughts, ideas, and actions that encourage and inspire. My name is Taylor Tack. I am a forgiveness champion and coach certified by the Midwest Institute for Forgiveness Training and a certified Napoleon Hill Foundation leadership instructor. I teach people precisely how to let go of hurts and resentments, both big and small, releasing emotional pain and suffering to experience lasting peace, freedom, and inner success. Find out more about my work and my latest book, The Path to a Peaceful Heart. Please visit me at TheEvolvingHeart.com and sign up for my monthly newsletter. I'm also writing a new book with certified Napoleon Hill instructors Tom Cunningham and Tim Chim on lessons from adversity and defeat to be published in September of this year. You can check out more on the Triple T team at adversityanddefeat.com. And now to today's success story. My guest today is Dr. Daria Brzezinski. Now, for 30 years, Dr. Brzezinski has researched educational systems, family living models, holistic health modalities, ecological solutions, religious influences, birthing practices, neurophysiological breakthroughs, child-related legislation, and laws around the world. She's offered publications on a variety of these topics, and she's mentioned in many more articles and publications, including the APH Journal, which is the Association for Humanistic Psychology, New York Times, Echo Magazine, the Business Journal, ABC, NBC, and PBS. And her website emphasizes what wise women want and inspiring women's roles to God's children's souls. And Dr. Brzezinski is joining us today on Journey to Success Radio to talk about what we can do to change our culture of violence into peace and sacredness. Dr. Brzezinski, welcome to Journey to Success Radio today. How are you?
Thank you very much, Taylor. I'm very, very well. It's a real challenge to, in the midst of all the things that are going on in the news today, to try and talk about these things and to help people to realize that we can have a peaceful world if we just do change a few things.
Well, first of all, thank you for joining us on the program today. And this is a great topic to talk about is peace in the world. And I know many people are walking towards peace and they desperately want peace in their lives. So give us an idea of the work that you do and how you help shift people towards peace and some of the things that you do to help them get there.
Well, I have spent the last 30 years of my life researching why, for example, do we have violent young men who shoot up schools. I have an article on my website, which is www.docdaria.com, on this 12-year study that I did of school shooters. And what I discovered from much of the research and from my own experiences as a therapist is that violence doesn't happen. It's not happenstance, but there are a series of events starting, believe it or not, all the way back from birth. And our birthing techniques that we use in the United States, for example, which is, although we've known about gravity for hundreds of years, we insist on laying women flat. And what that does is the gravity itself does not kick in. So we have to pull a child out. And there are so many ramifications of this, it's unbelievable. We either do that or we do cesarean section. Both of those things have ramifications. It's against nature. Both of those things have ramification in terms of our spiritual connection to ourselves. And it's so vast that it's really difficult to talk about just in this short program. But And another part is severing the cord from the mother instead of letting it fall off naturally. All these things create a disconnect between mother and child, and bonding is a real key issue in terms of children being nonviolent. There was a study done at the National Institute of Health. It was a 25-year study by someone done by Dr. James Prescott, and he studied 49 nations over 25 years, The results are found in a documentary called Rockabye Baby. And just to summarize, what he discovered was that they had a study done by Dr. Harlow, and this study showed that if monkeys were separated from their mothers and put in an environment with a cloth surrogate or food, they chose the cloth surrogate over the food. And so our connection to our mother, the touching, the smell of her body, nursing, all of those things create a bonding climate for the child, and the way we birth our children create a bonding climate. And so what happened in this study was that they could predict violence in a culture just by all of these things at the beginning of birth. So what happens when this doesn't happen? Well, for example, if you have had a cesarean section, there was a study done that was published in JAMA, the Journal of American Medical Association, about 15 years ago, which went pretty much under the rug. And what they discovered was women who have cesarean section, when you are in your mother's womb, you have twice as many neurons as you need, because as you pass through the birth canal, those neurons get destroyed and you end up with the normal amount that you need. But if you go through cesarean section, you end up with twice as many as you need. And what happens is you become oversensitive, which leads to ADD and other kinds of problems with children, being overstimulated by the environment, again leading to the kinds of environments for violent children. So we have so many. So what happens is we have these children begin to show violent tendencies or misbehaviors or not following directions, talking back to their parents at very young ages. And what the current, and I'm a psychologist, and what my current profession does is we medicate children into complacency. So it's this whole series of events that takes place, rather than going from the very beginning, in terms of being loving, caring, and the gentleness of the beginning environments of children. Now, I have studied school shooters over the years, and every single one of them has been on one psychotropic drug or antidepressants, as they're called, for another. The diagnostic and statistical manual for mental disorders is what psychiatrists use to determine behaviors, and virtually every normal behavior in a child now is considered a diagnostic and statistical disorder. And so what happens is these children become drugged for various kinds of things as early as 6 and 7 years old. What I discovered was school shooters were on 1, 2, 3, and sometimes 5 of these antidepressants all at the same time. So this is there is a multitude of behaviors going on here where we are perpetuating the kinds of violence we see in these young men who turn out to be school shooters. And, you know, we can't dismiss the violence on television, the violence in movies, the violence in video games.
Well, I'm curious about that, too, because, you know, I'm sure you know the research on this, see the statistics of kids who are exposed to video games and, you know, the kill, kill, kill mentality of those video games. And what do you, have you seen research and what maybe this may play a part in children's
let me explain it to you neurophysiologically. Sure. When a child, a brain does not develop until the age of 12. When you sit a child in front of a video game or a computer or a television for that matter, what happens is there are three parts of your brain, the instinctual brain, which is in the back, the midbrain, and the forebrain in the front, the prefrontal cortex. And so what happens is when you sit a child in front of a television, the midbrain, which has filters to both the frontal and the instinctual brain, shuts down. And when that shuts down, what's in that midbrain that exists is our physicalness and our emotions. So a child sitting still and emotionless and not being able to react to a situation naturally, those filters shut down. That leads to psychopathic behavior, because when children have the unfiltering of all of this information coming into them, they have no capacity. They are not maturity-wise able to develop the ability to know what's right and wrong. They take every single thing literally because those filters shut down. What happens is, in your frontal brain is where your logic is. In the brain in the back, in your instinctual brain, is where you respond to stimuli. So, for example, a child sitting in front of the television or computer or one of these games, if they are intent on this game and you create a banging noise or a very loud noise, they don't even react to it because those filters are shut down and the instinctual brain in the back does not have the capacity to be able to react. So much so that when they are observing the killings and all of that, it becomes like a mantra over and over and over again, much like commercials on television. If you see it, or information on television, when you see it over and over and over again, your filters break down and you believe it to be true. Whether it's true or not, you believe it to be true because it's been reinforced over and over again. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, it kind of goes back to the training mentality too. You've done it a million times on the video game, so when you've lost that ability to be able to take in information, reality versus non-reality, it's just you're just doing what you've trained yourself to do. So I can see the correlations here.
What happens is children don't develop coping skills. We wonder why people in the military today and all these youths are committing suicide, or I mean, part of it has to do with the psychotropic drugs, but part of it also has to do with coping skills and an affluent society. We don't allow our children the opportunity to fail. Somehow failure has become something that's so negative that if it happens to you, it's the end of your world. You know, a girlfriend breaks up with you, you failed, you commit suicide. And so our children have not developed coping skills for the little things in life, much less the big things that we all know happen throughout life. You know, one can never know when you have a natural disaster, or you've lost all your money, or you've been fired, or your, you know, company collapses and you no longer have a job. And youth today do not have the coping skills for the minor kinds of things in life, much less the major things in life, which is why we see a lot of the military committing suicide. They have the inability to cope, to get back into society, because we have developed a whole culture of tampering and giving them what they want and not giving them the ability to fail or to have life lessons that will build character and the ability to be able to cope with issues that get much larger as you get older.
Well, absolutely, and that's what we do here on this program and in my work too. It's teaching people how to take whatever adversity and defeat they have in their life and transform it into something that it's useful for them, that will help them learn what they need to learn, which is an important part of life. And I think you're right that people have just tried to avoid pain and suffering as much as they can. And that's a natural part of life that needs to be experienced.
Yes.
So, Dr. Brzezinski, tell us, you know, we have this culture of medications now with kids and adults alike, and children are not getting the things that they need as young people and young adults. And so tell us about how you are able to deal with that in your work. How do you transform a child into a peaceful child? How do you do that? Tell us how you work with that.
Well, it's kind of a very long story, but I've spent my entire life trying to make this a better world for children, and all the work that I do, the lectures, the speaking before Congress. And what I came to realize recently is, if we don't change women, children's lives will not change. And I just can't believe the women that I see in my practice and the kinds of misinformation they have and everything they believe to be true, which isn't true at all, because we've been enculturated over years not to question authority, question behaviors, question the rituals that we have. And so part of what I do is I try to educate women. I have conferences and forums. I have one coming up in October the 12th, in Charlottesville, and we'll be addressing issues with mothers. Can you really have it all? This is one. We have 55% of the population of children in this United States who are being raised by single mothers who believe they can have it all. And you can't have it all. That's just a piece of propaganda that we've been given over the years, where women have been led to believe, you know, you can have a career, you can have children, you can have a social life, you can have a personal life, you can do all of these things, and it has absolutely no consequences. And the truth of the matter is, it's, you know, I listen to all the head of Google and the head of Yahoo, all of whom are very powerful millionaire women, who are trying to tell the majority of women how to raise their children when, you know, they have nannies and maids and everything else. It's unrealistic. The other thing we're going to be talking about is alternative therapies instead of invasive therapies, stereotyping, images, the secrets, untold stories of the effects of miscarriages and domestic abuse and all these things on women. And what happens is when you educate women to these things, they automatically transfer this information and begin to start thinking about their children. And one of the things I'm going to be doing in the spring is having a conference. My company is called What Wise Women Want. And in the spring, we'll be doing, in the fall, we do all women's issues. And in the spring, we do children's issues. And one of the questions we discuss is, do children suffer spiritual bankruptcy from capitalism? Can violent boys be prevented? What are the essential elements of play? What constitutes a good education? These are all questions we need to discuss in terms of educating, well, it's not just women, it's people in general, about how we can transform children's lives. Now, in my private practice, every child is different. People come to me with issues with their children, and one cannot change a child if you don't educate the parents. It's not a child's fault. It's their environment. It's the parents. It's some sort of behavior that's happening in the home. So for many, many years, I have been working with children and having to trace backwards and find out, you know, the birthing practices and all the ways. Were they in daycare? As far as I'm concerned, I don't know how a culture and a society can justify paying minimum wage to people, mostly women, who are caring for our children at the most formative years of their life when their brain is and their social mores are developing. And we have high school students who are in daycares taking care of our children and herding them around in groups of 20s and 30s. This is not healthy for our children. And, you know, we've gotten away from having mothers staying at home with the child or anyone staying home with the child. We either hire people or we put them in daycares, and we think that this is all okay and the child's going to turn out okay because we're socializing them. When in fact, socialization, the basis of socialization, comes from the family. And that's where it begins, and that's the relationship you have with the world is the relationship you have with your parents and your siblings, your grandparents, your uncles and aunts, and those who are closest to you. That's what you project onto the world. I enjoy so much listening to all the talking heads on television every time there's a school shooting or a violent act or something like that. No one, even though when you go to therapy, everyone knows you trace back to childhood in order to understand where the behavior came from. And yet when all the experts appear on television and radio, they don't talk about these issues in terms of prevention strategies for developing healthy children. And so what I do is I take parents toward the process with their children. I've had anorexic little boys at age 7. I mean, that's unheard of. So Yeah. So, you know, and I see the issues with children escalating instead of getting better and multiplying in terms of the kinds of issues they're coming with at earlier and earlier ages. Longitudinal studies have been done by the Swedes for many years. One of them is the Hunt study. And what they did was they went to a community in Denmark. And this community had taken, they have their records back for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. And what they discovered in all these longitudinal studies, Norway and Sweden, is that it is not just your current living situation, your parents that you were born into, that affects your life. We know genetics changes a person's life. But ironically, the Bible's comment that says the sins of the parents to the third and fourth generation actually is being scientifically proven. For example, if your parents were, if your great-great-grandparents were in a poverty situation where they were starving, let's say it was your great-great-grandmother, it doesn't affect her, may not affect her children or her grandchildren, but it does affect her the health of her great-great-grandchildren. Your health depends on the things that happened to your great-great-grandparents. And these are studies that are coming out more and more and more. So you just don't inherit your eye color and hair color and stature or skin color. You also inherit behaviors and your health from many generations past.
Right, and I can imagine that one of the the tenets of that is to raise your awareness, of your family history and your family genealogy.
Exactly.
And notice that the things that your great grandparents did in their lives, they passed on to their kids, which passed them on down to this generation to you. And so there's a awareness about that and a realization, really, that you can stop the pattern if you want to. It's up to you. It's your choice.
Yes.
And so, how do you help? Say, for example, there's many women that are listening to our program right now. What's the first step for them if they're concerned about their children and they want to raise healthier children? What's the first step for them to be able to begin to put that into practice for themselves?
Well, first thing is to stop feeling guilty. Mothers tend to feel guilty about everything. And this conversation isn't meant just because you feel you've done something wrong somewhere along the line. You need to stop feeling guilty, number one. Women have really low self-esteem issues, and this perpetuates, feeding into those kinds of emotional issues. So the next thing you need to do is to take a step, and that step is to get help. Whether it's, you can contact me, I have an 800 number, you can email me from my website. The thing is to find out, and I'm not able to help people for everything that needs to be done. For example, I have physicians that I work with. A lot of times children behavior has to do with the amount of sugar in their diet. From the 1970s, we've discovered that the amount of corn syrup in a child's diet is so unbelievably huge amounts that it now affects, it shows up in our hair. When hair analysis is done, the amount of sugar and corn syrup in the hair is off the charts than it was, two generations ago when people ate more vegetables and healthier foods. So it's not just me, but what I do is I do a great analysis of, getting the history, finding out what's happening today, and trying to trace back. I've been doing this for 30 years, so I'm pretty astute at figuring out in a very short period of time what direction people need to go just by having conversations with them. And there are many avenues. There is no one-size-fits-all formula. Every child is different. Every parent is different. Every circumstance is different. If you've got abuse in your life of any kind, verbal, physical, emotional abuse, this affects your child, and it needs to be dealt with. And generally, children who are in those circumstances will act out in one way or another, either hurting themselves or lashing out on them, on their siblings, on their families, or even, you know, in the school setting. So there is no one-size-fits-all, but what I do is I find out step by step by step, and it has, you know, I don't make anyone feel guilty about whatever it is, the circumstances that happen in a child's life, but what we need to do is to look at those and go backwards and try and unravel on how we can change those behaviors.
Yeah, I like that too, because, you know, I think, you know, most of life is really not, you know, not what we can gain in life, it's what can we remove, the roadblocks we can remove that we've learned as children in order to, you know, increase our joy and unravel our love, you know, for life and for other people around us, the people that especially are closest to us. But I think that that work goes a long way in helping that. And again, if
now,
you want to...
you've defined my definition of adulthood is undoing all the things that happened to you in childhood.
Right.
Having the opportunity to unravel all those things that happened to you in childhood.
Right. You hear the phrase, you know, most of your adulthood is unraveling and getting over the first 5 years, undoing the first five. And so
yeah.
that's a great thing. And again, if you want to read more about Dr. Brzezinski's website, you can go to dariabrzezinski.com. That's dariabrzezinski.com.
You can also go to, it's also under www.docdariadaria.com. It's a little shorter and easier to spell.
Yeah, absolutely.
I also have a blog where I talk about the Encyclopedia of Healthy Living, and I help people to, my blog is full of information on how to, you know, create a healthy lifestyle for yourself and your family. So I'm all over. I'm on LinkedIn, I'm on Facebook and Twitter. You can find me virtually anywhere on social networking as well.
Well, absolutely.
You also do this kind of work, you know, your work that you do, and I know a lot of, you know, the philosophies that, you know, your organization promotes. And, you know, we're all doing after the fact and trying to clean up the messes that were made. And my philosophy is to try and educate people in order to do preventative strategies so I can go out of business, so that we can go out of business and have a more peaceful lifestyle. I lived in Sweden, and I couldn't believe the difference in the behavior of people. They are more serene. They are more, you know, this is why they don't have a lot of violence. You could walk the streets at 2 and 3 in the morning without fear in national parks because, you know, the town I lived in Sweden, where I was president of university, people were out picnicking at 2 and 3 in the morning. There was no fear, and there were no homicides in the 10 years prior to my being there. So there are cultures on this planet, and we have to look at those cultures and say, what are we doing differently in America than in the United States, than other countries, and how can we rectify it and prevent these things from happening?
Well,
so you and I can go out of business.
Yeah, I would love to go out of business. But unfortunately, I think it's going to take a lot more work to make that happen. Dr. Brzezinski, we'll ask you our final question here on Journey to Success, which is a Journey to Success original. And tell us really what some final thoughts around what it really is for you. What drives you to be successful? What makes you get up every day and do what you do for people?
If I can help just one child and one parent to live a better, healthier life, that's what drives me every day. And it's wonderful to be able to have feedback after 30 years of people telling me, you know, you really changed my life, or I read your article and I just couldn't believe, you know, how it helped me or educated me. Just touching people's lives and helping just one person is what I'm all about. And if I can make this a better world for children, through the women who take care of them and the parents who take care of them, I will feel like I am a success. I think in this country that we have it's long overdue that consumerism and making money and having power is the formula for success. But rather, I think it's about time we got back to the real kinds of issues: cooperation, compassion, integrity. Those are the kinds of things that make a civilization whole and spiritual and safe for our children and at peace. And I'm hoping that in my lifetime, which I'm not sure that will ever happen, but that's my hope. Someone always said, make sure you dream bigger than could possibly ever happen in your lifetime. And that's what I'd love to see: healthy, happy children who are smiling and laughing all the way up until they become adults. That would be my greatest joy in life. And I do see that on occasion. And it really is a very satisfying profession over the years when one can see those things happening.
Well, I totally agree, and that was very well said. And so thank you for that. I love your explanation on that. So again, we want to thank you to Dr. Daria Brzezinski for joining us today. You are listening to the Journey to Success Radio Network. Find out more about the network, you can visit us at journeytosuccessradio.com. And we will see you soon for our next amazing success story. Bye for now.
Thank you.